Welcome to this week's episode of the Sports Community Podcast, a podcast to get volunteers of sports clubs excited, empowered, and motivated. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Pellis and Jonah Vella.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Podcast here with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pellis. We are up to episode number 81. Who would have thought? Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great guest who's going to be joining us later on in the show, which we'll tell you all about in a minute. But before we get to that, I'd like to introduce my partner here in crime, Mr. Steve Pellis. Welcome to the show, Steve.
G'day, Joe. It's great to be back in the studio. It's been a long time on the road.
Now, tell the listeners, because you've done an absolute Ask the Leyland Brothers in the last couple of weeks. So tell us all where you've been.
Well, yeah, and
why you've been there.
Yeah, I have had the pleasure of travelling around the country, Joe, and talking to a whole range of different people in sport. And we must apologise. Well, I must take full responsibility. I must apologise to the listeners because we haven't been able to get a show out every week because I have been travelling around the country. But my journey, Joe, and this is in the last three or four weeks, I had the pleasure of spending 4 days in Perth in Western Australia, working with about 20 bowls clubs from Western Australia and really a three-day leadership course, which was absolutely fantastic from my perspective because I learned a lot and really gratifying because what the course did for the participating clubs in the bowls clubs in Western Australia was they realised that they had to change, and that the change wasn't as big and as daunting as hard as what they thought, and so really excited to see what's going to happen in Western Australia as the clubs have embraced that whole change. Came back to Melbourne for a couple of days and then hopped on a plane, Joe, and this was literally my next 10 days were up to Northern Territory to talk with Northern Territory Sport and Recreation because they've just released, the Northern Territory Sport and Rec have just released the master plan into sport and active recreation in the Northern Territory. So really a framework about what the community wants looking forward and lots of different options and recommendations at how Northern Territory Sport and Recreation can facilitate at the government level. So that was really cool, Joe, because that was really looking at that policy and that really high level fundamental view, helicopter view of sport. Got on a plane and into the Kimberley, outback Western Australia, and had the pleasure of doing two training sessions with clubs in Kununurra and Derby, Joe. And I've got to tell you, Derby was a little bit stressful to get to because, first of all, Derby's 225 kilometres north of Broome, so fly into Broome, get a car, and you've got to drive that 225 kilometres. I only had about 3.5 hours, and I thought, well, that's fine, 225 kilometres. But all along the road, Joe, is you're driving effectively through what, I don't know, the world's biggest sheep station. And there's no fences, and like these aren't sheep. Oh, sorry, not sheep, cattle. Cows. But these aren't cattle. These are like, I don't know,
bullocks.
I don't know. They're half of a house or something. They're these massive things that just walk across the road as they see fit. So it was actually quite stressful driving to Kununurra. To Derby, because the cows would just wander across the road, and then the kangaroos would come across the road, and that sort of thing. Did the set or drove, got to Derby, and the presenter's worst nightmare pulled in, and I had a big Pajero, which was pretty cool because I'm only a little dude. Big Pajero, put my suitcase or my bag and my projector, the laptop in the back, and it had a big cage to separate luggage from the passengers, and get out with half an hour before the session starts. 40 degrees in Derby, Joe, and press a little button that should open the back door of the car. And nothing. And fair to say, Jay, you and I, we're not the most mechanically minded of people. So
no,
this is a challenge for me that my computer, my clothes, is stuck in the back of a car or a Pajero that I can't get out of. Anyway, long story short, we just engage some of the locals that had some skills into breaking into cars, Jake.
Because they all drive Pajeros.
They all drive Pajeros. Yeah. They all drive those big trucks. And even a couple of kind locals were helped me. And I got to the session 2 minutes before it started, dripping in sweat, but got through it. The next morning, though, because there's so much livestock, I had a 9 o'clock flight, 225 kilometres away from where I'm staying, but you're not allowed to drive on the roads when it's daylight. Until it's daylight. So you can't leave at 5 o'clock in the morning. You've got to wait to daylight. So here I was waiting for day. I was sitting in the service station in Derby, waiting for the sun to come up. Sun comes up, start to drive back down the road. And not just is there kangaroo, I reckon in the first 5 kilometres, Joe, there was probably 10 kangaroos bounce across the road and the cows are just all out. And then there's these lizards that are the size of, I don't know, but I didn't want to hit them. So they're running across the road as well. So I'm in this air-conditioned car sweating because I'm under so much pressure. So anyway, we finally got back, fly home, Broome to Perth, Perth to Melbourne. That's a long couple of flights. Back on the plane 2 days later, back on the plane to go and present at the Cricket Australia, an internal conference for their club development staff. So about how to empower volunteers and how to grow the sport, but more about how to support volunteers and clubs. And that was really, really, really interesting to see that perspective of a sport that's finally, sport is itself finally catching on that, you know, if you help and support the volunteer, I don't know, that might actually help you achieve your goals for your sport. And that's taken sport, without being critical of any one particular sport, that's taken sport a long time. It's been one of our biggest frustrations is to wait for that evolution. And that's why we created Sports Community, because sport wasn't helping and focusing on the volunteers. But it was great to see a sport and such a high-profile and iconic sport in Australia as cricket really take those first initial steps, and we're really proud and excited to be part of that journey. So that was there. That was in the that was in Brisbane in the Cricket Centre of Excellence. And Joe, it was my childhood dream that I always got to this Cricket Australia's Centre of Excellence, but not as a player, unfortunately. But it's a flash place. Back on the plane and heading home now, but got to go via Sydney to the Blue Mountains and spoke at the New South Wales Sport and Recreation Regional Conference, and about 40 councils, and it was just fascinating talking to the councils again about how they can support volunteers. And on my way home, Joe, it allowed me to reflect on just the different perspectives. You know, we started that journey with talking with the state sport and rec at a policy level and at a high government level. Talk to the grassroots sports within the outback. Talk with one of the biggest peak bodies in the country, if not the biggest, Cricket Australia. And then come back on the way back and talk sport from the council perspective, who's probably the biggest stakeholder in Australian sports. So it was a really great little time for me, Joe, and gave me a lot of time to reflect and think about how we can help all those people help sporting club volunteers. But really, really interesting. But the outcome of that was that we missed a couple of radio shows, so we promise we'll make it up to everybody.
Absolutely.
And first way of doing that, Joe, got an amazing, and I mean this genuinely, got an amazing guest who's going to talk about a topic that's almost a taboo topic in sport. So, Joe, who are
you? Yes, and absolutely. And if you have just joined us or tuned in for the first time, no, this is not the Australian Travel Show with Steve Pallas. It is actually Sports Community Podcast talking all about sport. And today we have Simon Dodd who joins us. He is the Associate Director Engagement at Origin, and that's ORYGEN, the National Centre of Excellence in Youth Mental Health. And we'll be talking to him, or Steve will be talking to him about that particular subject topic, which is of interest to all of us involved in grassroots sports, especially with the amount of tragic news around youth suicide and depression and anxiety. So this, I imagine, is of interest to a lot of us out there. So stay tuned. We'll be with Simon just after this short announcement.
Lists of jobs, no one to help, people calling, spreadsheets to update, emails to send, equipment to order, functions to organise, too much to do and no time. This is what the day in a life of a sports club committee member can be like. But it doesn't have to be. Sign up to our Leadership Masterclass to learn how to calmly and easily lead your club to achieve big goals while minimising the amount of volunteers' time needed and engaging your whole membership. To sign up, simply visit www.sportscommunity.com.au.
All right, as mentioned at the top of the show, we're taking a little bit of a different look today and got a guest from a different angle looking at sport. And his name is Simon Dodd. And Simon is the Associate Director of Engagement of Origin. Now, Origin is the National Centre of Excellence in Youth Mental Health. So, Simon, welcome to Sports Community Podcast.
Thanks very much, Steve.
So let's start with the most obvious question. What is Origin, first and foremost?
Well, Origin is the National Centre of Excellence in Youth Mental Health, as you said, and I should tell your listeners that it's spelled O-R-Y-G-E-N, and it's not the power company. So when they're searching for it online, they'll need to spell it right, but they'll find a couple of really good sites if they do that.
So let's start with that. So if they're searching for it online, it's O-R-Y-G-E-N.org.au?
That'll get them there. If they just put it to a search engine, and they'll get there. There's a couple of sites, our sister site with our clinical program funded by the State Government of Victoria, and our program, which is a not-for-profit, limited by currency agency, which has a role in helping promote the best outcomes for young people across Australia in terms of their mental health.
Brilliant. So predominantly it's a research group or research and programs and treatment?
So we're quite a complicated structure, but basically we've got a big chunk of people who are world experts in youth mental health, including our director, our CEO, Professor Patrick McGorry, a number of colleagues of his, and we're heavily involved in a whole range of research around youth mental health. But obviously you need to see young people to understand mental ill health, and so we actually have a partner program which is called Origin also, which is a tertiary mental health program attached to the Melbourne Health, which is most people would know as Royal Melbourne Hospital, and it's run through a program called Northwestern Mental Health, and it's in Melbourne. And then we also have our own, we've got four headspaces that we work with in our program that we see young people in. So that's our clinical component. And then we also, in terms of reaching the most young people, the program I work within is our Skills and Knowledge program, and we're responsible for taking research and our clinical practice and actually disseminating that knowledge out into the larger community of workers, helping them to be able to work with young people in the most effective and efficient and evidence-based way in order to improve their outcomes.
And outcomes being the well-being of the youth of today, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So we see people who have established mental ill health with diagnoses, as well as helping people who may have an emerging or an early stage of their mental health problems. But we also go even further back. We're interested in talking to communities and improving sort of the general health literacy, mental health literacy of communities, and helping the communities understand mental ill health and mental health a little bit more fully, so that they can help the people that they care about and the people they're involved in have the best life they can.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not sure if this is a simplistic question or not, but what is mental health and what is therefore by definition mental ill health, like in layman's terms? Because it's a terminology that's really being used a lot today. But if I was asked by my children to define it, I actually wouldn't know how to define it.
Right. Well, it's a great question actually, and it's not actually that straightforward. But if you went to the World Health Organization and asked them what it was, and I've actually got a quote here on my wall, and it's described as a state of well-being in which everyone can realize their best potential, and they can cope with the normal stresses of life, they can work and study and live fruitfully, and they're able to make a contribution to their community. So that's me paraphrasing the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
So basically, people can be the best they can be in themselves and with the people that they connect with in the world.
Yeah.
Now, mental ill health,
yep,
is a sort of a term that's been coined by Professor McGorry. There's a lot of stigma around mental illness, so we really want people to be thinking about a continuum of health. That mental ill health is more describing when people may have some health problems around their mental, sort of in the mental sphere of their life.
Yep.
All the way up to a diagnosable disorder, such as depression, for example.
Sure.
So we want people to be thinking about their health on a continuum. So say you a lot of the people that be listening to this podcast are probably pretty healthy or have been pretty healthy. They'll know that if they keep their diet and they do their exercise a certain amount, then they will remain healthy and look after themselves. And if they don't, then they'll become unhealthy. Well, mental health is the same, and if you look after yourself mentally and you set up connections with the people who you trust and support, and you talk about issues in your life and you develop skills to manage those health problems, then you'll remain mentally healthy. But if you don't and you ignore them and you, you know, you shut things down and you maybe drink a bit too much and, you know, generally get stressed too much without doing anything about that, then you can become unhealthy, mentally unhealthy, and have mental ill health issues. So we just wanted people to think about this as a continuum, because that's what it is, and people can move and fluctuate on that continuum.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. If I flip the conversation just to come at it from the context of the sports club volunteer who's in those roles, those leadership roles, committee, executive committee, coach, team manager, parent, spectator, observer, what are some of the things that would potentially be the symptoms of mental ill health?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's a huge number of different, you know, health problems that people can have, and it's sort of like asking what are some health problems that people might have. So,
sure.
So bearing that in mind, talking about things in a very general sense, yeah, obviously people should see if anyone's worried about their health or the health of someone, then they need to talk to a professional to get a specific advice. There you go. That's my obligatory, you know, rider. But one of the best ways to think about mental health issues is to think about people's, the way they're thinking, the way they're feeling, their physical experience of life, and what they're doing. And all of those in terms of how people might be functioning, so how they're coping. So the people we would like to have the skills and the knowledge to understand how to help people in terms of your sort of world, Steve, are the people who are probably already hearing these stories. Young people who they trust, some of the adults or the older
yep.
Adult, and the to them and expressing some concern or something's not right, you know, they may drop, miss out a whole lot of footy or dead ball or whatever they might be missing out on. Or they might start drinking a bit more, they might be a bit erratic, or they might lose their temper a bit more. When there's a consistent sort of change in how people are behaving, then that's a bit of a, particularly if they're isolating themselves from their friends and the people who they typically would hang out with, and or they're, you know, they don't seem to be enjoying the things that they used to be enjoying, then really they, it's worth touching base with them. And this is one of the skills that we think people need more of, is an ability to talk. Particularly young men are not very good at talking. As a man myself, I find it when I was a young person, I probably didn't talk very much to many people. And when I talk to young men now, it's often a real challenge to get them to say anything, let alone something sensitive and personal. But I think the chances are that the most likely people that someone might talk to are people they trust, and these leaders in these clubs, these volunteers and leaders are often people they trust in that sort of sporting world. We can use that to help the young person talk about what's happening for them so that they can get the help they might need.
You've just summarised, when we speak to presidents and coaches particularly, they will inevitably say that there's a percentage and a growing percentage of their time which is really counselling, not necessarily sport related issues, because there is that through the intensity of competition and working hard towards the achieving of goals, there's the acceleration of building relationships and trust. You're 100% right, and often it's where people turn to. And so what you're really saying, though, then is that a change of behaviour and withdrawing and drinking more or being more aggressive or than they've previously been or whatever, that could be, that's not just someone, a term that was always brought up as I was coming up through sport, they've just gone off the rails. That could be a trigger to say, well, hey, hold on, that's worth a conversation to see what's causing that.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. That it's worth talking to people to find out. Because really those four things I talked about, the feelings and the thoughts, the physical sort of experience of the person and the behaviours, the people outside that person can only see what they're doing, the behaviours. So that you need to ask people how they're feeling and what they're, you know, what's going on with their thinking, or what are they thinking about, or they express to you what they're thinking. And you might notice also some changes in their physical capacity. So if you're not sleeping, for example, when I'm talking about physical, I'm saying things like insomnia or people not able to get to sleep, or they're waking up lots of times in the night, or they're waking up really early and they're feeling really tired all the time. That's an example of a physical sort of experience. This is not uncommon in, say, a presentation like depression. So that's going to affect people, you know, the way people perform. A lot of the time, the person might be thinking a lot, might be thinking, really ruminating on things. And in the sporting world, when we talk to different athletes who have described their experiences with depression, they talk about that ruminating, really running over all the negatives in their performance. Now, they may have, they may have been nearly best on ground, but the fact that they weren't best on ground, you know, is the thing they're thinking about. So it's sort of looking through everything through a dark. There's a term you use sometimes called looking through a the world through a dark glass, or a glass darkly, and so everything in the world is sort of, it's like the opposite of rose-coloured glasses. You know?
Yep.
Sort of everything's dark and dingy and depressed and down. So you know that's what we're talking about in terms of the thoughts and in terms of the feelings. We're talking about people feeling, you know, sad and or empty or numb or irritable. Particularly young men often present as yes. shitting all the time. And that's often, that's out of character. And if it's persistent, these things need to be persistent. We're not just talking about, one training session where someone loses it and runs off. We're talking about this has been happening for a couple of weeks or 3 or 4 weeks. Things aren't right. There's a real, 3 or 4 weeks is probably too long. A couple of weeks is long enough, or even a week. Have a chat.
Okay, so that...
find out what's going on.
That short and intense a change. So... if I'm, again, in one of those roles, and it doesn't matter what the role is, but I observe this change in someone else, that conversation, mate, you're right. I mean, for most of us, that's an incredibly difficult conversation. We wouldn't know, I wouldn't necessarily know what's the right thing, what's the wrong thing. So what resources, how do I go about preparing myself? Am I the right person to tackle this conversation? Is there any resources that I can learn a bit more about this? The next step after the identification?
Well, look, there is actually some really good resources. The AFL has done some good stuff about a whole range of resources in terms of in the sporting world. But, of course, and you can search for that, it's on their online. But there's also, you can go to our website, there's some resources there, some fact sheets and materials and webinars and little mini... learning programs, online learning programs, and also there's some other programs. Headspace is a fantastic resource. Another one is something called Reach Out, and that's R-E-A-C-H-O-U-T, Reach Out or Reach Out Pro. If you just search for these in the search engines, you'll find those, or maybe I can send you the links to that you can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, there's a whole lot of good resources in there. And of course, there's the classics like Beyond Blue. They have fantastic resources and a whole lot of material in there. So they're all possible and useful resources to find out a lot of this sort of material. But really, I think one of the other points you're making there is about understanding people's roles. And I'm not talking about saying to people that you're the president of a club, you're in a volunteer role, and now suddenly you have to be some sort of professional counsellor.
Hmm.
That's not what we're talking about. What we're really talking about is these young people are often going to these people anyway, so why don't we give them these trusted people in the clubs, having some skills is actually incredibly useful for them in order to sort of deal with the situations that are occurring to them. As they work, so people need to be clear about the roles, and really all their role is to be a concerned friend or colleague, and knowing who the person should be talking to in terms of getting some professional support. So that's a really important.
Just thinking exactly the same thing. You've almost just taken an immense burden off the volunteer. I mean, because being that professional counsellor is an incredible burden, but being a concerned colleague, that's something we can all do. So,
I think people already are doing that. So that's where you need to understand your role. And I think people don't realise that when you've got a personal connection with someone, you can't really be an effective. It's very difficult to be effective in a therapy role. Right, like a counsellor might be.
Yep.
So if a friend of mine had problems and they came to talk to me, I would be able to work with them therapeutically. I would actually be able to say, I'm your mate, I can be your mate about this and that and this, but you should see a professional about that. And that, the professional, it's not only about knowledge, it's actually about the quality of the relationship you have with someone. It's different. And, you need a little bit of distance from people to actually help them often. A little bit of distance, because it's a different kind of relationship. But that's an important thing to acknowledge.
Sure. So I'm the concerned colleague. I kind of tap my colleague on the shoulder. And so you're probably saying the best forum is not necessarily to sit down and have a beer, but to have a chat and a conversation about how am I feeling, am I sleeping, those sorts of things. If you're kind of ticking all those symptoms, or some of those symptoms that you're talking about, the person's feeling stressed, anxious, and those sorts of things, you raise the awareness, and the person and the person that you're talking to says, "Yeah, I probably do have a problem or an issue that needs to be considered further, at least." Where is that next point of referral?
Yeah, great. Well, so the best place to go is obviously somewhere local and accessible. And, you know, there's 90 or so headspaces around Australia right now, which is something that Australia has that most other countries are incredibly envious of, this sort of resource that we have. And it's fantastic, this incredible youth-focused health and mental health sort of support that people can get. So that would be the first place I would suggest a young person goes to or gets referred to. There and their GP programs, basically with some extra resources connected to them. And so anyone can go to a GP under Medicare. There might be a gap, there might not, depends on the various headspaces, but they can also do something, you know, they can arrange and to get under federal government better access funding for the right people. They could get free support from a psychologist, for example, for a period of number of sessions, and that could be all a person might need. They could also get referred to a psychiatrist or, you know, another professional.
Yeah.
So the GP headspace is a great place to start if you've got one. And in those places which don't have one, then there's a lot of fantastic GPs out there. And really, I think headspaces are, people don't realise this, but headspaces are really GPs with a whole lot of extra supports and specialist interest and specialist staff to work with young people. So there are a lot of GPs who aren't in headspaces who are fantastic. And finding the right one is a challenge sometimes, but if you find the one that you trust, then that's a fantastic option for someone.
Is there an age that we're talking about here? Like, is there, could it be from birth onwards, or is it a...
No, Headspace sort of programs are, and I don't work for Headspace, just to be clear here, I work with them a lot.
Yep.
From 12 to 25
yep.
Is the age range. So if you're in that age range, then you can get some support from those. Younger than that is probably a specialist agency, and so a child and adolescent mental health service would be a way to go, or a paediatrician. And you get, again, your GP is the way to get a referral to those sort of programs.
Okay, but is it common for, well, comparatively for kids under the age of 12 to be have mental ill health?
Look, there are some mental health issues that occur under the age of 12 that people would probably know about, autism, for example, or autism spectrum type.
Yep.
Disorders.
Yep.
And a number of young children often display symptoms of anxiety and often sure. are related to a variety of different social stresses in their life. And there are very rare cases of other disorders that might occur in children under the age of 12. But the vast majority of mental health disorders that occur in the adult life start before the age of 25.
Yeah.
Something in the order of 85 or so percent occur between the ages of 15 and 25 for the first time. And so that's why our focus and the focus of these early intervention services like Headspace Youth Services are aimed at those age ranges in terms of helping people when they may be most vulnerable to becoming unwell for the first time. So.
Oh, well, that's yeah, that's really important, isn't it? So let's flip the conversation around then. So I'm the leader of the club again, and if we look at physical injury, that's an everyday occurrence in community sports clubs, and ironically, in some, it's even worn as a badge of honour. You know, Nate Fyfe, we think of in awe of the play, made 25 possessions in last year's grand final with a broken leg, and Sam Burgess in the rugby league grand final. Concussion's probably not physical, but well, probably is. But the physical side of the injury and ill health, we have no problem talking about it whatsoever. There's no stigma attached to broken this, broken that, pulled hammy this, that. How can we change that thinking within the club, because it's I guess mental health is sounding like it's just a part of life and we're all prone to it. So how can the club president you know, raise the profile within their club? Because it sounds like it's vitally important for the long-term health of our community, I mean, not just within their environment.
Well, I mean, you're right, it is. It's, if we look at sort of the incidence of disease, mental health disorders, in terms of under the age of 25, about one in four young people will suffer from some sort of mental disorder in a year.
Wow.
So if you build the MCG, which holds 100,024 people, I think, currently, then that is 26,000 people at the MCG. If they were under the age of 25...
Typical North Melbourne crowd, really.
So this is the most common problem in young people. And in terms of, when we look at across the world, in terms of disorders or what we call the burden disease, the impact of disease on people between the ages of 10 and 24, in terms of young men, in the top 10, we've got road traffic accidents at number one.
Yeah.
Then we've got second one is depression. Then there is injury from violence. Then we've got alcohol. Then we have schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and some sort of self-inflicted injury. After that comes, this is across the world, comes HIV, then tuberculosis, and then asthma, which might surprise some people. They would have thought asthma was much earlier than that. Now, in terms of women, of the top 10, five mental health disorders, including the top three, which is depression, schizophrenia, and bipolar disorder. In terms of the impact, so in terms of that, that's what we're talking about, the global burden of disease in young people, the impact of those diseases in terms of the sort of the harm that it causes or the impairment to functioning. They're the top three. So it is a very big issue, and it's quite common. In terms of young people.
So if I'm a president, which so many, I can visualise hundreds of people already listening to this and going, wow, what can I do? Like, and I'm talking now from the proactive, raise the profile stance as opposed to, you know, identifying colleagues and players and kids with that may be suffering from symptoms or of mental illness. What can we do to raise that profile within our club and our club's community about it? And as you said earlier on in the interview, just completely destroy the stigma that is related to mental health and well-being.
Yeah, well, look, that's a really tough one. I mean, I think we're trying to normalise this. It's quite, you know, it's not normal, these feelings, but it's not uncommon. So it's not normal to feel crap all the time. And Mitch Clark actually has a great description of depression, right? And I'll quote him here. People think depression is sadness, he says. People think depression is crying. People think depression is dressing in black. But people are wrong. Depression is a constant feeling of being numb to emotions, numb to life. You wake up in the morning just to go back to bed again. Days aren't really days, they're just annoying obstacles that need to be faced. When you're depressed, you grasp onto anything that can get you through the day. Now, you know, that's an elite athlete and a person who most people would say, geez, they're going all right, they're doing very well in their life, they have nothing to be sad about. And of course, that's irrelevant to what the person who experiences depression is. People like Nathan Thompson and Wayne Schwoss and Mitch Clark talking about their experiences of mental health issues and mental health difficulties, that's one of the great ways to actually get people not be as worried about the stigma, not to be ashamed of something that, you know, they're not ashamed of the broken link they received.
Yeah, that's right.
They're ashamed of, being really... unwell in terms of their mental health. You know, you wouldn't expect someone with a broken leg to, you know, to carry a piano upstairs. Why are we worried about someone with depression? You know, why aren't we looking after that and thinking the same way? And it's a really difficult question to answer.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know where to go with that. I think you've done a wonderful. I came into this interview really feeling like the volunteer had a tremendous burden that almost they have to talk people through it. But really, what you're saying is it's just being aware of what's going on around you, having typical "Are you okay? How are you feeling? Are you okay?" sort of conversation, and then encouraging and supporting the person to seek help in whether it's going to their GP or Headspace or reach out Beyond Blue, reach out Pro, or even to your own website, Origin with a Y, .org.au. I mean, that's very attainable, and if we keep talking about it and raising the profile, reducing the stigma, if our elite sportsmen and for those that aren't au fait with AFL football, the Mitch Clarks, the Wayne Schwossers and the Nathan Thompsons are all elite AFL footballers that have been very, very successful in their own right. I mean, they're coming out and talking about their journey, which is, making it easy for the next people to follow, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Look, Steve, the work that you're doing here, talking about this stuff, I think that's a really important thing too. Talking about it, and as if it's in a sort of a matter-of-fact thing that affects so many people in society. If we had no secrets, people would be so amazed at the number of people they know who have had mental health issues, and that would, I think, reduce their stigma. Can I just say one more thing about how to get help and what to do in terms of helping your mates?
Please.
So you've had a conversation with someone and, they told you they're not travelling very well.
Yep.
You were worried about them. You said, "Hey, what's going on, mate? I saw this, I saw that. What's going on? Are you okay? Do you want to talk about it? I want to listen. I'm going to tell you some stuff and you're a bit worried about it." So, "Well, look, why don't, I think maybe you need to see a professional. I'd like to help you. I'm your mate, but I don't know this stuff. Why don't you go and see someone together? That stuff could be really important. I'll come with you."
Yeah.
And that can help get the person past, get them in the door, get them in the room with the person who they might see. That's the really important sort of thing. And that's really what we want people to do, is mates, to be mates with people, not to gloss things over, but actually to actually support their mates in this very, very addressable but tough sort of issue. If you talked about a broken leg, if people didn't get help for their broken leg, they wouldn't be walking properly.
Exactly.
So we don't expect them not to get help, and that's a good analogy to use, I think, with people. That asthma is a good one. You would be able to, heaps of footy players are, other sporting people are playing elite level sport who are asthmatics, we don't think anything of them getting a bit of support for that, or
no.
Maybe missing a game because they've had a really bad attack, or we just say, "Oh, that's not good, we've got to look after them." That's the sort of thing we need to start moving along with in terms of mental health.
Yeah. Well, Simon, we could talk all day. It's a topic that fascinates me from the sports club perspective and the life perspective. And I thank you so much for sharing your time. I thank you so much for converting what we all know is a very potentially complex topic into something that is as simple as chatting with your mates. And we all can do that. That's one thing that blokes and women alike are very good at is chatting to their mates and in that social context. So I thank you very much for sharing your experience, your knowledge, and the work that Origin and the National Centre of Excellence of Youth Mental Health are doing. I think that's wonderful, and we'll promote this far and wide when it goes to air. Well, that's simple advice, isn't it? Talk to each other. So Simon Dodd, Associate Director of Engagement at Origin, the National Centre of Excellence in Youth Mental Health, thank you so much for joining us on Sports Community Radio.
Thanks again, Steve.
Thanks for joining us on today's podcast. Make sure you visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au to take advantage of our free resources to help your club be successful. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter to keep up to date with all the latest and greatest in grassroots sports. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and be sure to subscribe to our podcasts on your podcasting service, iTunes, Stitcher, or whichever you may use. We would also love to welcome you onto one of our weekly webinars, the schedule of which you can find on our website. And if you're looking for a unique gift, why not give the gift of knowledge by visiting our shop and purchasing one of our training products for someone at your club. Once again, thanks for being part of today's show. I'm Joe Novella.
And I'm Steve Pallas. Thank you for making us part of your sports community.